Yeah, good to go. Okay. We are live.
You're live.
Okay. So I decided that for the two chaburos leading up to Pesach, that we would do something which is Pesach-oriented, because it's very difficult in this season to think about anything outside of Pesach. With all the preparations, I was going to do some othering in Chosh and Mishpat, and then I thought, no, my head is in Pesach right now. So we're going to talk about inyanim that relate to Mechiras Chometz, because this is also a Beis Din function. Certainly here in Chicago, one of the roles that the Chicago Rabbinical Council plays is that we coordinate the Mechiras Chometz, the sale of the Chometz on behalf of many of the Rabbanim in the community, many of the shuls in the community. We do Mechiras Chometz not only for the congregants, the members of the community, but also for various organizations. We do Mechiras Chometz, for example, for the JCFS, the Jewish Child and Family Services. We do Mechiras Chometz also for a plethora of companies that are certified by the CRC. If they're Jewish-owned, so then we make sure to sell all of their chametz to Pesach, because this is also an important function of our role as a kashrus agency. So on many different levels, Mechiras Chometz is relevant to our work as a Beis Din, in my capacity as the Abbez and as the Chief Rabbinical Judge of the Chicago Rabbinical Council. So I'm the one who generally supervises and carries out in the Mechiras. So what I wanted to do is to discuss, first of all, some of the underpinnings and the sources of the Mechiras Chometz, and also some of the issues that arise with respect to Mechiras Chometz. So first, in terms of just the basic background of Mechiras Chometz, it's not really explicitly addressed in the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim talks about two different ways in which we fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu, of getting rid of our chometz before Pesach, of any unleavened products and so forth from the fried grains before Pesach. So one way is bedikas chometz. That's the most obvious, you know, mitzvah that we're supposed to do, bedikas chometz, and then we're supposed to burn any chometz that we find. That's what we call bio chometz. When we start the bedika on the 14th night of Nisan, we already make the bracha of al bio chometz, because it's the beginning of the process that's going to culminate in the burning of the chometz. So the Gemara mentions that in addition to bedikas chometz, we also do bitul chometz. We also nullify any chometz which is in our possession. We're familiar with the Aramaic statement that we make, called chamira chamira dika v'shusi, right? De lo chazise, de lo biarte, v'havi hefkir, ka'afa diara, that everything is just going to be completely nullified. We do a bitul in the evening, and then we do another bitul in the morning. The bitul in the morning is even the chometz that we know about, that we have seen, we mevatel that chometz as well. In the evening, we not mevatel all the chometz, because we want to eat a little bit extra in the morning, but we do this bitul. So, yes.
Can you lock it up in your house and put a lock on the cabinet?
Well, we're going to talk about it. No, because there's a violation of Bayi Rav Lo Yimatzeh, that you're not allowed to see chometz, you're not allowed to find chometz. It means you're not allowed to possess chometz on Pesach. So you have to get rid of the chometz from your possession. One way that you can get rid of the chometz from your possession is by eradicating it, just weeding out all of the chometz. You do a very thorough search, and then you burn the chometz at the end. And the other way that you get rid of the chometz is to say, well, even if the chometz is in my house, I am nullifying it. I'm nullifying it. I'm making it like hefker. I'm making it like the dirt of the earth. It doesn't count. It's as if it doesn't exist. And bittul works in terms of causing the chometz to no longer be considered owned by you, because you have basically forsaken any type of ownership of the chometz. So the Gemara asks the question, why do I need bittul? Bidika should really be sufficient. And the Gemara says, no, we're worried that Shemim Sagluska Yafe, we're afraid you're going to find a really nice and tempting piece of chometz cake over the course of Pesach, and you're going to forget yourself for one moment. You can't be mevatel the chometz at that point, because it's considered as if the chometz is no longer in your possession to effectuate a bittul. The Gemara says that there are two things that are in your possession technically, but the Torah makes it as if you no longer have any control or ownership over it, and one is if a person digs a pit in a public thoroughfare, bor v'shus harabim, that v'shus harabim is not a domain that belongs to anyone, but if you dig a pit there and somebody falls in, you're going to be responsible, because the Torah says that you still bear responsibility. And the other is chametz b'pesach, that we say after the sixth hour in Pesach it becomes asur v'hana, that it becomes considered, it's considered to be prohibited not only to eat, but we paskin, that it's also prohibited to derive any benefit from the chametz starting from that point in time. So therefore, it's really outside of your domain anyway, but the Torah imposes a continuing responsibility upon you that you have violated lo yirav lo yimatze if you have not officially gotten rid of it from your domain. So if you find the chametz over the course of Pesach, you don't have the ability to nullify it at that point in time, because technically speaking, it's already asur b'hana, it's prohibited in benefit, and therefore you can't effectuate any kind of status change on the chametz at that point in time. So I'm going to look at this very tempting and delicious piece of chametz cake. I might not eat it. That would be really bad if you eat it. Like, that's one concern, that you might forget yourself for a period of time, which you say, wow, this happens. Sometimes people are on a trip, and they'll say, oh, let's stop in the Baskin Robbins and buy some ice cream. You know, and they forget for a second that it's Pesach. That's like really, really bad. And hopefully they'll remember before they actually take a bite out of the ice cream cone, because that's like the worst possible thing that you can do. But people will remind themselves, oh, we can't do that because it's Pesach. So fortunately, they'll remind themselves. So the Gemara assumes the person will remind themselves before they actually eat the piece of cake. We really hope that will be the case. But nonetheless, for a split moment in time, they will intend to reacquire it, so to speak, and they won't be able to be mabatalit, so they will be violating the isolav, the negative prohibition against owning chametz on Pesach when that occurs. Therefore, we say you can't rely upon the bedikah alone. Better that you should be mabatalit this way. Even if you found it during Pesach, it didn't belong. It doesn't, you know, already starting from the beginning of Pesach, it didn't belong to you, and you don't have to do a bittul at that point in time. So the other question is, well, once you're going to do bittul, so why can't I rely upon bittul alone? Why isn't nullification good enough? So that the Gemara doesn't answer. The Gemara doesn't answer that question because the Gemara has to leave something for the Rishonim to do. Otherwise, they would just twiddle their fingers all day. They wouldn't have anything to do. So the Gemara had to leave this question for the Rishonim. So there are two different explanations in the Rishonim as to why this is the case. One is the Ran. The Ran says that we are afraid that the person is not going to be mevatel b'lev shalom. If all the chumets, as you said, the person's still sitting around with all the chumets in their possession and their premises, so the person might have said that they're going to nullify all the chumets, but maybe they don't really mean it. Maybe they don't really mean it. So therefore, we say better that you should try your best also to eradicate all the chametz from your premises. You should eradicate all your chametz, and if it turns out you missed something, so you will mevatel it, and that way you're covered on both fronts. That's the Ran's explanation. Tosfos says, no, we're worried that if you're going to be mevatel, you see, if you do a bedikah, so it's a little bit of a far-fetched kshash that you're going to also find something that you didn't completely cover in your very exhaustive search for chametz before Pesach. But if you do bittul, so you didn't even try to weed anything out, it's all going to be sitting there. Everything's going to be sitting there, so you'll have lots of things. You're going to have cakes and cookies and challah rolls and... I remember once I was in a Fairway in the Upper West Side of Manhattan on Chol HaMoed Pesach, because we're buying like Kosher Pesach products. It's a very awkward thing to shop in a regular supermarket during Pesach. Let's assume it's a supermarket, you know, you're comfortable shopping in. Like, it's not Jewish owned and they're selling hummus during Pesach, which would be very uncomfortable to be present in such a place altogether. It's a non-Jewish supermarket, but you're inside there and there are all of these rows with cereal boxes and bread, and you're doing your shopping. It's uncomfortable. That's why we created Hungarian and places of that sort. You could just go into a store, Chol HaMoed Pesach, and all you see are things that are kosher l'Pesach. It's an awkward thing altogether, but we had to go anyway, so we were in Fairway Chol HaMoed Pesach, and we learned our lesson as to why it's not a good idea to do this. It was the strangest thing. I'm not going to mention, because this goes on Torah anytime and who knows where else, so I'm not going to mention the specific bakery to which this occurred and that we witnessed. I'm not going to mention the name of the bakery. I'm just not going to do it. But assume that it was some sort of a well-known bakery that produces challos and challah loaves and like on a very regular basis. And we're there. It's Chol HaMoed. It's Erev Shabbos, I guess, or maybe it's Thursday afternoon on Chol HaMoed. And these workers come in, like they're unloading a truck shipment, and they are stocking the various shelves in which the kosher products appear. And they take out all of these, what appear to be fresh, maybe they're unfrozen, challos and challah rolls. With insignia of the labeling of this kosher bakery company and putting them on the shelves. And we were just in a complete state of shock and horror. We were just dumbfounded. We just did not know how to react to the situation. It was kind of beyond any kind of comprehension or explication whatsoever. I don't have any comprehension. I think we just walked out and we were in such a stupor, we just canceled it from our memory banks and we just pretended it didn't happen, because it just like, it's one of these things that even though it happened, it like, it couldn't have happened. We could not have seen what we had just seen. Right, okay.
So, yeah.
Obviously, it was a middleman, because I'm sure that the bakery itself had nothing to do with it, but it was just this completely shocking and horrifying moment. So anyway, says Tosfos. So Tosfos says you're going to have all of these chametz products around you. All you did was bittul in your house, but everything is all over the place. You might come to eat something. So then we're really worried that maybe you're going to come to eat something. So therefore, on that basis, bedika is not going to be enough based on what the Gemara says. Bittul is not going to be enough, as explained by Ron and the Tosfos. So fine. So let's say I did bedika and I did bittul. Okay, and now after Pesach has ended, I discover that there is still something that I didn't get rid of. There's something I didn't get rid of. And it's not during Pesach, it's after Pesach. It's something I didn't get rid of. So this is not Chomet She'avol of a Pesach. We paskin that there's a knas, like Rabbi Shimon, that there's a knas, there's a penalty, that if you did own chametz over Pesach, so then, even if it was by accident, we say, you know, unless, maybe if it was an onus gomor, maybe that might be a different story, discussion in the Mishnah Berurah, but generally speaking, we say if it was chametz she'avol of a Pesach, so you can't get any benefit from that chametz. This chametz owned by a Jew can't even be, it's not only you. It was owned by some other Jew over Pesach, so you're not allowed to get benefit from it. You can't eat that chametz. You can't benefit from that chametz after Pesach. It's chametz she'avol of a Pesach. But let's say it's not chametz she'avol of a Pesach. It's chametz that was in your possession, but you did bedika, you did bittul, you did all of these things. So are you allowed to eat that chametz after Pesach? So this is a machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish and the Talmud Yerushalmi. It's quoted by the Russian Maseches Pesachim. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you're not allowed to. Reish Lakish says, why not? You know, why not? It's a chumash, you did bittul on it, and now it's after Pesach, so why can't you eat it? Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you're not allowed to eat it, because we're afraid that if we would allow a person, when they would discover chametz after Pesach that was in their possession the entire time, allow them to eat it, so the same concern that the Ron had, we would have in that situation. So if a person knew that, maybe their bittul would not be b'lev shalem. When they would nullify all the chametz that might be in their possession they don't know about, it wouldn't be with a full heart. They would think, yeah, I'm nullifying, but if I should find something, I find some whiskey, beer, whatever that I forgot about, then I'd like to consume that after Pesach. So it's not going to be with a full heart. So therefore, l'chatzkila, to begin with, we prohibit proactively anybody from being able to partake of some chametz that happens to have been left over in their possession over Pesach. This is the question that always arises with the, especially with parents of young children, you know, with the inevitable bag of Cheerios somewhere that gets discovered. So you're allowed to eat the Cheerios and you're not allowed to eat the Cheerios after Pesach. So this relates to that discussion. Do we say, oh, this is such a far-fetched onus, maybe we'll be makel? That's a whole question in its own right. But according to the strict halacha, Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you're not allowed to eat the chametz in such a situation. So what do you do if you want to make sure not to violate having chametz in your possession over Pesach? You want to fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisa, you're going to do bedika, you're going to do bittul, you're going to do everything properly, but maybe you want to be able to partake of some of that chametz after Pesach. So what do? We just learned, based on the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan, that bittul isn't going to cut it. If I do bedika and I really try to get rid of everything, so that's not going to cut it, because I'm certainly not going to have anything left. I'm going to have to just pour out all of the liquor that I own, and I'm going to have to throw out all of the rolls that I have. It's interesting, there's a sheet of the Baal HaMor. Baal HaMor says, you know, there's another way you can be Mekayim Tashbisu before Pesach. One way you can be Mekayim Tashbisu before Pesach is by eating the chametz. That's one good thing. So this way you don't have to throw it out in the garbage or burn it. You just eat it. You eat lots and lots of chametz. When my sons went to Yeshiva Katana of Manhattan, they would have, I think they did away with this, but they used to have every single year, you know, because we say in the Manishtana, Shokodos Anoachlin, chametz, umatzah, chametz, umatzah. They would have a chametz umatzah party. If they would have in school, that they would have like some bread, they would eat like, you know, lots of bread and rolls and so forth, and pizza, and then they would have matzah. They would have, okay, so this way we're Mekayim, we're having chametz and matzah, so now we can contrast it with, on Pesach, and we're just going to have matzah. Okay. But you can eat, you know, as much as you eat, but there's only so much that a person can eat, and once you've eaten it, you can't eat your cake and have it too, right? I mean, I think the expression that people say is you can't have your cake and eat it too. One of my professors, when I was going to Yeshiva College, I think maybe it was Dr. Schatz, if I recall correctly, said that really that is the wrong formulation of the expression. The correct articulation is you can't eat your cake and have it too, you know, because once you eat it, then you can't have it anymore. You can have your cake and eat it too, because what's wrong? I mean, I have the cake, it's in front of me, why shouldn't I be able to eat it? Everybody eats the cake that they have. You present it with a birthday cake and you eat it. That's like the normal thing to do. So you can't eat your cake and have it too. You can't have it afterwards. Okay, so if you want to be able to have it afterwards, what do?
They expect you to take good, expensive liquor.
So that's what you're thinking. What are you doing with good expensive liquor? You're going to just say, oh, maybe it's not really chametz. We'll come up with a new hetzer. We'll say, oh, you know what? The original chametz content, the barley, whatever it was, it evaporated. It evaporated, so it's no longer chametz. There were those who wanted to make that argument. Rav Soloveitchik didn't really buy that argument. Rav Soloveitchik said, no, it doesn't matter that it evaporated. We constituted it afterwards. It's chametz. Rav Soloveitchik held that the liquor is chametz gomer. It's not just some sort of a chumer that we're going to say the beer and the liquor is chametz. No, it's a real full play. The chametz. Okay, so what do you do? So this is where the chilas chametz comes into the picture. You sell your chametz. If you sell the chametz and it didn't belong to you bichlal over the course of Pesach, you didn't have to get rid of it because you just sold it to somebody else. So then you can just buy it back after Pesach. You buy it back after Pesach. That's no problem. That doesn't fit within Rabbi Yochanan Shita that was saying you're not going to nullify it, b'leiv shon, that you sold it. You sold it. The guy, you have to sell it. Obviously, it would have to be a meaningful and true sale where the guy, the non-Jew, that you would sell it to, you shouldn't sell it to a Jew. That doesn't accomplish anything. You sell it to a non-Jew who's allowed to own a chametz over the course of Pesach. You give him a full, unfettered access to the chametz over the course of Pesach. He can walk in. You give him this, what they used to do. When I was growing up, you sold the chametz to the guy, you gave your key. You gave at least, you know, one set of your house keys you gave to the Rav. And he had in his drawer, I remember this going to Rav Moshe David Tendler's, you know, house, you know, before Pesach, my parents would send me with an envelope with the keys inside. And he would have different envelopes with everybody's keys from the entire community. He would keep it in a certain drawer. So he would be able to show the non-Jew who bought the chametz, okay, here's the drawer with everybody's keys. Here's their addresses and here's where you go. You want to pick up some schnapps, some beer, so here's, this is what this one has. You're in the mood for some Cheerios, some Golden Grahams, go to this house. You want some good schnapps, you go to this one's house. So he had the keys and the information to everybody's house. The key thing was a big deal. In the early years, in the early ages of Mechiras Chametz, giving in the Mafteach was something which was very much emphasized by the postman. That was considered to be a very big deal, giving in the Mafteach. We sort of moved away from that. I think in most places where when we do Mechiras Chametz nowadays, we moved away from that, but it's not so pashut that this is something that, you know, shouldn't still be done. So Mechiras Chametz, this is the way in which you can ensure that you can sell the Chametz, not violating prohibitions of Chametz, during Pesach, and then be able to partake of the chametz after Pesach, because it's not a sure thing. It's not a sure thing. It's only if the non-Jew is willing to sell the chametz back afterwards. He may not be willing to sell the chametz back afterwards, but if he does, so then you'll be able to partake of the chametz. Not only that, but the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Pesach assumes, and this is kind of a little bit of a chiddush, because not all the Achronim necessarily agree with this, but the Mishnah Berurah takes it as a matter of course. Mishnah Berurah assumes that this is also, this is in a Siman Tuf Lamed Bav. It's not in the materials. It's in Simon Tuf Lamed Bav at the very end of the Mishnah. But why should I put anything in? This is just like a prop. Yes, Hashem, we'll refer to some of the things soon. So the Mishnah says, this is a kiyum, this is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Tashbisu. In addition to Tashbisu, the idea of getting rid of chametz, which is a positive commandment, in addition to that being fulfilled through the Bedika, in addition to that being fulfilled through the Biur, which is a continuation of the Bedika, in addition to it being fulfilled by the Bittul, in addition to it being fulfilled, according to the Baal Amor, by eating the chametz beforehand, Baal Amor was speaking about the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, that maybe, according to his opinion, you could actually eat chametz in the afternoon of Erev Pesach, and not have to finish eating it in the morning. So he held that you can fulfill Tashbisu by eating it. Okay, but we don't hold like that. But we do hold, we could extend the Baal Amor to eating the chametz during the time that we're allowed to eat the chametz and fulfilling Tashbisu that way. So in addition to all that, the Mishnah Berurah says selling the chametz is a fulfillment of Tashbisu. It's actually a mitzvah to go about selling the chumetz. This is another form of eradicating the chumetz that, number one, could be a fulfillment of Tashbisu, but number two, would give you the right to partake of the chumetz after Pesach is over. But wait a second. What's really going on over here? This sounds a little bit suspicious, as the question was posed. But it's still sitting in your property, as Mr. Fried said. It's still sitting in your property. So is this really a sale? Do you really intend to sell your chametz when it's going to still be sitting in your pantry, it's going to be sitting in your cabinets? Chances are the goy is not going to come to partake of the chametz over the course of Pesach. Maybe this whole thing is just a giant ruse. Maybe this whole thing is a giant sham. Maybe it's what we call a haruma. It's a ruse. And maybe we should not allow for such a ruse. So where did it come from, this idea of selling the chametz? So the answer is that if it would not have any kind of a sound basis, maybe it's something that we should be much more circumspect about. But it appears, not in the Mishnah, not in the Gemara, it appears in the Tosefta. You have to turn all the way to the back of the Gemara. Psalkim can be very heavy, right? It's like a very big Gemara. You got to turn all the pages the very back and get to the Tosefta part that hardly anybody ever looks at. But there it is in the Tosefta. What's the case in the Tosefta? Tosefta, Perek Beis, Halacha Yabeis. Psalkim, you saw a goy. He said, "She went and Anju. She buy him a Svina. They're in a boat. The chametz b'yad Yisrael, and he can't eradicate his chametz so easily because they're in a boat. Hareza mochro lenochri. So." Presumably, they can't make like a bonfire, in the boat, in order for him to do regular beer chametz. But maybe he holds that the beer is only really fulfilled by burning. The chametz beyad Yisrael raised the mocha the nachri. He sells it to the nachri. The nosam vatano, he give it to him as a gift. The chosav lokekum men alachav pesach. So we have both elements of mechiras chametz that are mentioned in the Tosefta. Number one, the element, and maybe this is a case where it's expensive liquor and he wants it, he doesn't want to throw it into the sea, which is probably the more plausible explanation. So what we have over here is the legitimacy of conducting a mechiras chametz, and also the legitimacy of there being some sort of an expectation that you're going to be able to buy it back after Pesach. Tosefta doesn't have a problem with it. But Tosefta says, Ubovad, and this is where Tosefta says, you can't do this as an absolute ruse. Ubovad, she didn't allow up in Matana Gemura. It has to be a full-fledged gift. It can't be that because you have an expectation that you're going to get it back, the seller has an expectation he's going to get back the chametz at the end of Pesach, so therefore he kind of makes a tonight, makes a condition with a non-Jew. He says, I am hereby going to sell you my chametz on condition that you sell it back to me after Pesach. No, it can't be like that. It has to be an understanding that if the non-Jew wants, he can consume the chametz entirely. It has to be a mechira gemur. So we see both elements in the Tosefta. Number one, it has to be mechira gemur, matana gemur, when it's given over to the non-Jew. But number two, it's still okay that once Pesach is over, if the non-Jew has not consumed the chametz, that it's okay for the Jew to buy it back and to partake of the chametz. So it's all right there.
Why does it have to be matana gemur? Don't we say matana manas lahaks, which means matana?
Yeah, except over here, matana manas lahaks is going to look like a giant ruse. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Tov Mem Ches, Sif Gimel. That's source number two. It talks about how imachro, if you sell it and give it to a non-Jew, and he assumes outside of the house. Why outside of the house? Because if I have chometz, I'm not mean, I have a chayus, I have responsibility for it, so that also is a prohibition during Pesach. So we want to avoid any kind of responsibility for the chometz, and that's an important theme as well. We somehow figured out that we can keep the chometz in our homes, but we just say that we take no responsibility for it. In the event anything should happen to the chometz, the non-Jew will still be responsible for paying the rest of the purchase price. But the easier way to accomplish that is for the chometz to be outside of the house before Pesach. So it says that the Shulchan Aruch, mutter, it's all mutter to have the chometz sold to the non-Jew, even though Yodea Bo, so Yigabo Klau, even though the Jew knows that the non-Jew is not going to touch the chometz during Pesach, he's just going to watch it until after Pesach and return it to him. Mutter, fine. Tonight, as long as there is a matana gemula that is given over to the non-Jew, if it's in the achrayus of the non-Jew, it would be another reason why it should be outside the Jew's possession, because that would be, you know, the only reason why. Okay. Oh, if it would be oshim karenalo mechira gemura b'davar muat, or he's going to sell it b'davar muat for a small price. Matana manas aksil lo mehani. But says the Shulchan Aruch very clearly, matana manas aksil is not good enough in this particular case. Even if it's good enough to fulfill your mitzvah of shaking a lulav and sukkis, it's not going to be good enough for this mechira, because this has to be an absolute mechira. So that's the idea. No, what we're saying is basically that it should be completely dispelled from the Jew's possession. And this idea of Yishmerenu Lo, we're not really comfortable with that either. We don't want Yishmerenu Lo. No, it has to be really. That's why we don't, you know, provide that requirement upon, you know, the non-Jew. But it's completely his. It's completely his during this period of time. So there's a famous opinion of the Bechor Shur. That's what I have here. Source 3. Source 3 is the Bechor Shur, also known as the Tefuah Shur. He's very famous for a parish on Hilchos Shechita, very well known for writing a commentary to the laws of Shechita. But the Bechor Shur also has what to say about Mechivas Chometz as well. And he says that you can't make this into a complete game and a complete farce. And he's really known for standing for the proposition that Mechivas Chometz only works for Chometz which is the Rabbanim. Only if it's chometz to Rabbanim, if it's chometz to Araisa, if it's chometz on a Torah level, like bread sticks or Cheerios or possibly liquor, something which is chometz on a Araisa level, so then you cannot rely upon mechiras chometz. Then you can't rely upon mechiras chometz. The only thing is, the Bechor Shur didn't actually say that. It's just various people quoting the Bechor Shur who say that. That's why I reprinted for you the Bechor Shur. The Bechor Shur actually says something else. He says, oh yeah, mechiras chometz, that's fine. People do mechiras chometz all the time. But what I really don't approve of, says the Bechor Shur, is people who sell their animals. They sell their animals, they have to eat chometz over the course of Pesach, and then other people, they sell to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew is feeding this animal actual chometz, and this is your property. You're getting direct benefit on Pesach from chometz that your animal is being fed. And he says that this is completely unacceptable, because your animal is eating real chometz, and that's something that I would never allow. He says, selling your chometz, oh, fine, you're going to sell your chometz. I'm not worried about that, because you're not benefiting from your chometz over the course of Pesach. It's true, you might buy it back after Pesach, but this is not what we would call a ruse, a type of sham transaction on a deraisa, and I'll give you a simple explanation why this is not a deraisa. He says, you really shouldn't do something which is a haroma if it's a deraisa, yet your animal is going to be fed actual chometz. But this is not on a deraisa, because you do bittul. You did bittul. Remember we spoke about it? Everybody does bittul. So everybody's going to say, I'm nullifying all my chometz. So your chometz is nullified anyway. You're selling it to the non-Jew. So you're selling chometz, which basically you would not be liable upon on a deraisa level. You're only going to be liable on a derabbanan level. Since you're only going to be liable on a derabbanan level, because you didn't get rid of the chometz entirely, so therefore, that's why the sale is going to be okay. And he goes and he says a couple of other things. He says, and another reason why it appears that this whole mechiras chometz business is a suspect is because it doesn't really seem to be genuine. What's not genuine about it? Who's the non-Jew that everybody is typically going to pick? They're going to pick like their garbage man. They're going to pick their butler. They're going to pick somebody who is not independently wealthy. Somebody who's not independently wealthy. It's like some servant of the house who's going to end up being the non-Jew who acquires the chametz, who doesn't really have the wherewithal to buy all the chametz. You have all this expensive liquor, especially if I'm selling all of the chametz of like every Jew in Chicago to one individual. So you got to wonder whether that person is sufficiently wealthy to buy everything. That's why we try to line up somebody who's a person of means. In the Mechilas Chometz that's done in Riverdale, for example, by Rabbi Mordechai Willick, he sells to a person who professes, you know, in front of everybody every single year to be a very wealthy individual. He says, if I wanted to, I could afford this. I could afford to buy all of this chometz. And he makes sure he buys it. In Omaha, Nebraska, 1 year, they sold the chometz to Warren Buffett. You sell the chometz to Warren Buffett, so you don't really have to worry about, you know, him being good for the price. Right, he can pay for it. Whatever the chometz is, no matter how much liquor, whiskey you got in there, expensive cakes, you know, how many boxes of Cheerios, he can handle it. He can pay for it all. So this is really borne out in part from this comment of the Bechor Ashur that he's worried about being a ruse, because usually you would have a non-Jew who wasn't, you know, terribly wealthy. Sometimes you think a person isn't wealthy and they're really very wealthy. We had a secretary in my law firm who, like, you know, you wouldn't figure the secretaries were making so much. She started in the law firm when it was created. It was founded like in 1946 or so. She continued to work there apparently until about like 6-7 years ago. She like died a year later at the age of 99 or something like that. Jewish, nice, small Jewish lady. I remember her. So then everybody was shocked because when she died, she had like millions and millions of dollars because she donated them to good charitable causes and the like. But then they were trying to investigate. How did this, you know, little, you know, very menial type of quiet secretary end up making such a fortune of money? So what she did apparently is that every single time that her boss, you know, who was a long-term lawyer, you know, in the firm, whenever he would ask her to contact his broker to make an investment in a particular stock, so she put some of her own money in that stock every single time, because she figured that he probably knows where to invest, and whatever he invested, I'm going to invest in it. She made an absolute fortune of money. So you don't really know necessarily, but the question is assuming that most of the time the people that you think are not wealthy are really not wealthy, and therefore that's part of the ruse that he said, that it would be something of a haroma. So he says that you should avoid doing things as a haroma as much as possible. If you can't avoid it in terms of the financial means of the purchaser, so then he says you have to be very, very careful not to be mocher al tanai, not to sell the chometz with the clear, explicit stipulation that you're going to buy the chometz back after a Pesach. Okay, you can't have the non-Jew say, oh yeah, I commit that I'm going to sell the chometz back to you after Pesach. That's why we never say that. We never say that. What we say is, there's an expectation, that we have an expectation, or that we will allow for the non-Jew, if he wants, we turn to him and we say, if you want, and you want to sell it back to us after Pesach, we would not be averse to it, but it's not a condition of the sale, you're not obligated to do so. So that would be okay, but you can't make it an absolute condition of the sale. So anyway,
if you have animals, you don't get rid of them.
So most people don't have these animals, right? They don't have the animals. If you do have animals, to feed chometz to the animals, so this does create, according to the Bechor Ashur, that creates a problem. But that really is the main problem that was being decried by the Bechor Ashur. Well, when I was growing up, we had a dog. And obviously, we didn't sell the dog. We just made sure to feed matzah and matzah products to the dog. You can also feed kidneys. You can feed kidneys to your pets. If you look at the Chicago Rabbinical Council guide, so we have a whole list of pet products that you would be allowed to serve to your pet. A pet is not obligated in the prohibition of kidneys. You can't serve chometz because then you would be getting benefit from the chometz, but you're allowed to get benefit from kidneys. So even if it's kidneys, that would be okay.
If I'm doing bittul b'lev shalem, I'm sincere, then what are you selling by me? Then I'm not having a mechira afterwards. I don't own anything.
This is a very good question. So take a look at the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Okay, so Shulchan Aruch Harav in Source 4 says that Umasha Ola Adata Shemachiris Chometz Medivei Sofim. He says, this Bechor Ashur, he has the idea that when you're selling the chametz, it's only midrabanan because you're already doing bittul, right? So he says, shekom mevalin chametz, the omer, and they say there's a bittul formulation, kol chamira libatav lehevei hefker, he said, that's not really right. He says, that's not really correct. Shkagi hi biyado. The Bechor Shur got that wrong. He comes to Nimka in a Mechlah Bittul. Because the chametz that you're selling, that's the part of the bittul. It wouldn't be very nice for you to sell something that you don't have any rights over. If you were mevatel it, that you don't have the rights to sell it. So therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch Rav, the Baal Tanya, the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman Milodi, he says that you are selling chametz that 100% belongs to you when you're selling it to the goy. So according to the internal logic of the Bechor Shur, that you shouldn't violate, that you shouldn't rely on mechiras chametz for an issa deraisa, so then it would follow that you shouldn't do this. But the Bechor Shur himself felt that this was perfectly fine because of the fact that you had already done bittul. But if I combine together the svara of the Bechor Shur with the understanding that the chametz that you're selling is not chametz that you did bittul over, so then according to the Bechor Shur's logic, you would have a problem with selling chametz at deraisa. But don't blame the Bechor Shur himself for it because he didn't come up with that chumah. So therefore he says, Malchus Daito Olav Laks of Lazakus Bo. So therefore, he says, obviously, it's not for the very reason that I started out this year with, that you're selling it precisely so that you should be able to reclaim it after Pesach. It doesn't fall into that category of what you were mevatel. Rabbi Yochanan says, so we're afraid you're not going to be mevatel b'leiv shalom if we allow you to enjoy it after Pesach. So therefore, this obviously is not subject to bittul. And therefore he says that either you hold that the mechira is good even on chometz deraisa, but if you hold that the whole thing is really a ruse and shall only work with the rabbanon, so then we're out of luck once again because of the fact that we're relying upon it even on a deraisa level. So some resolve the issue of this issue by saying, okay, so just sell chometz to rabbanon. Things that are bitaruvis in a way that there should be bittul, and it's only going to be midrabanan. But others said no. This perhaps demonstrates that we don't hold like the Bechor Shur. That we hold, since we rely upon mechiras chametz, that mechiras chametz is good, even though it's on a deraisa level, and you can sell everything. You can sell the schnapps, you can sell the beer, you can sell the bread, you can sell the cakes, you can sell the Cheerios, you can sell all of these things, even if you're dealing with mechiras chametz on a deraisa level. That is what Shmuel Bozner writes in his Haskama to the Kuntaris, Bedin mechiras chametz kolis legoy. I don't remember when exactly I found this, but I found this at some point. So it says about Kfar Kesafti, Mishalos Tshuva Shevet Alevi Didas Rov Poskim Delavket Tfu Ashur. Says most of the poskim do not hold like the Tfu Ashur. They hold that Mechiras Chametz is a genuine thing that works even on Chametz Deraisa. But Alein the Kfar says Chametz Gedolei Yadoyus. And this is something that was agreed to by all of the Gedolim. Vechein Halacha, and this is the Halacha. Vayas Shebein Bittul Kodem Mechiras Bemitul Acham Mechiras Yesh Kolecha and Vayusa. A little couple of typos here. The Bittul Kodem Sending says that whenever you do the bittul, there's going to be a problem in either direction. What's the problem in either direction? We have to figure out, is it better for a person to do bittul first thing in the morning prior to the mechiras chametz, or is it better for the person to do bittul after the mechiras chametz? When do we normally do bittul? We normally do bittul after the mechiras chametz, right? Because we do it when we are burning our chametz. We burn the chametz a little bit later in the morning. We do the mechiras chametz like first thing in the morning, and we do bittul afterwards.
When is mechira effective? 11 o'clock?
You know what? For a long time, our mechiras chametz forums would say it's effective as of 11 a.m. or as of the last point in time. I don't like that lashon, so I kind of got rid of it. I said, no, what's we going to do in mechira? I'm not interested in putting off the chalos. I don't want there to be any braver problems, you know, on a kinyan level. I'm doing it right now. So I do generally speaking, when I do the sale, I do it to take place immediately when I do the sale, okay? But the truth of the matter is that bittul presents problems in both directions. What are the problems in both directions? Bittul kodem mechira, going to do the bittul, the nullification before the mechira. So then that raises the issue of the Shulchan Aruch Rav. Hek yimko mashi yivkir kvar. How can you sell that which you were ready? Wa mafkir. Halo bezeh meitel dofi bibitulo. U bittul acharei mechira. If you can do the mechira, the bittul after the mechira, you have a separate problem. You don't own any chametz anymore. You sold all the chametz to the goy. So how can you mevatel anything? Hek mevatel mashi mokho kvar. That's not very nice for me to nullify what I already sold to the goy. It's not even going to work anymore either, right?
Should we leave some out of the mechira? Should we purposely leave some out of the mechira?
So what I generally say when we do the sale to the non-Jew, I say, not everything is being included in the sale. Some people might have set aside a little bit of chametz, which they're still planning to eat. Because we do the mechiva first thing in the morning, then they might have a little bit of chametz that they're still planning to eat. So that chametz, I tell him it's not included in the sale. In addition, there's a little bit of chametz that was set aside in little bags that everybody prepared from last night when they did their cleaning of their homes, and they put 10 little pieces of bread in plastic bags. They put away for burning in the morning. It's going to be burned later on. That also is not included in the sale. And you just carve it out. You can verbally carve out from the sale certain pieces of chametz that are not going to get sold. So he says, the minhag adayos, what is the minhag? Which is better? Bittul before the sale or bittul after the sale? So he says, the minhag throughout the generations, hayak maranach sam seifer, levatel acha mechira. The minhag is to do the bittul after the mechira. There was any talomar, layel naseh sam mechira kahalacha. But he has a different svara. Not that I'm carving out. So it's not that I'm going to carve out just a small amount of a chumitz from the sale that I'm going to leave for the bittul. His svara is, maybe you're going to mess up with respect to the sale. You know what I mean? Everyone's relying upon this one figure, this one abezdin, to make a mechira for everybody. When you think about it, it's a lot of pressure to put on one person, you know? It's really, I mean, my goodness. So maybe something might not go 100% right, chas v'shalom. So therefore he says it's better to do the bittul afterwards just in case. Like you're saying in the bittul, any chametz that, you know, happens to still be in my possession. For all you know, maybe all of that chametz that you thought was sold is really in your possession because the rub messed up with respect to the sale. And therefore that's another good reason. Yes, of course, you should, at the time of the sale, it's appropriate to say to the non-Jewish purchaser, we're setting aside this amount that's not going to be included in the sale, whatever's going to be burned later on, but it's also good to do the bittul afterwards in case the whole sale was no good, because this way the bittul will work for everything that you thought may have gotten sold.
If the sale's no good, then I can't have the things after Pesach.
That's correct. But our general assumption is that the sale is good. I mean, Rav Schwartz once dealt with a situation. A Rav called him up in a panic, okay? In a panic in the middle of Pesach, because like in the middle of Yontif, something occurred to him. They didn't do in his community the sale of the Pesach with lots of pomp and ceremony and fanfare, so normally there wouldn't be lots of people around to watch it. And he remembered as he's sitting at his Seder, oh no, I forgot something. I forgot to do something. Erev Pesach morning. That had his community found out about this, he would have very quickly been dismissed from his position. He forgot to sell the chametz. I mean, you know, sometimes a rav forgets to do Erev Tavshilin, and if, like, you know, there happens to be an avezdin in the city, he's still going to be covered. That happened once. A rav came to me and said, I forgot Erev Tavshilin. I said, don't worry, I covered you. But when it comes to Mechira's chametz, there's no such dispensation. He didn't give his forms to anybody else. He forgot to do Mechira's chametz. So he went to Rav Schwartz in a panic, what do I do? And Rav Schwartz ended up being Mako, because he said, look, everyone did bittul, and also they tried to sell their chametz, meaning as far as they knew, they were selling their chametz. They authorized someone to sell chametz. I think I'm not going to get into all the technicalities of that, you know, ultimate decision, but whether one would choose to be Mako in that particular situation, one could certainly be Mako in a situation where there happened to be some defect in the sale itself. There was a sale, but there was some defect in the sale, so the poskim are generally Mako with respect to Chametz Shavuot of a Pesach in that situation, but you really try to avoid making any kind of a defect in the sale. The sale, yes. You can't do the sale on Chol HaMoed. It's too late already, because at this point in time, the people are already over in Bar Yirah, Bar Yimatzeh. Pesach began, and the individuals were over in Bar Yirah, Bar Yimatzeh. It can't be corrected subsequently. Then the chametz becomes usur. The chametz becomes usur, even if you get rid of it, even if you sell it in the middle of Pesach, and you don't really have, you know, it's not Peshuso Shaladim, it's usur Bahana anyway, so that would be a very complicated proposition. We do say to the non-Jew at the time of the sale that in the event that anything should happen to come into the possession of the purchase of the sellers over the course of Pesach, so that basically goes into a hefker sphere, because they're not going to acquire it. So you can acquire, you're going to take a possession of all of that over the course of Pesach. It's a question as to whether you have the ability to make that type of a sale. But it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, because what would happen? What would happen sometimes, I remember growing up that this happened once, that they gave out like Girl Scout cookies in people's mailboxes over the course of Pesach. And everybody, you know, they opened up their mailboxes and they were on the Girl Scout cookies. And everybody was so worried that they violated by Matzah. So the halacha born in Shulchan Aruch is that if a non-Jew brings you chametz on Pesach, you don't want to acquire it, so you're not going, your chatzir is not going to acquire the chametz for you against your will. So you wouldn't have violated by Yirah with respect to what arrived in the middle of a Pesach that you really genuinely do not want to acquire.
Yes?
Yeah, it's not yours, so you could throw it in the flush it down the toilet. That's the general advice, that you shouldn't have chametz anywhere, and you don't want your garbages to acquire it. That's always a question too, because people have chametz that might not have been sufficiently spoiled, that we would say that they did beer on their chametz. It's sitting in their garbage bags. You know, when I grew up in Muncie, so we had like 4 or 5 garbage pickups over the course of the morning on Erev Pesach, but we don't necessarily have that luxury here in Chicago. There's a special thing about Muncie. Muncie had a special quality to it. So it could be that it'll be past the time of beer chametz, and maybe there'll be garbage that people threw out that's not even going to be picked up until 2-3 days later, and it's sitting in the garbage. So we've discussed that a little bit from the CRC. People have asked us that question, said that, look, the garbage cans belong to the city, which is easy, and you put the garbage cans a little bit outside of your property in that the area which technically belongs to the city, so you should be okay with respect to the garbage cans. But you can also pour a little bit of ammonium fluid on top of the garbage so that you would ruin and destroy. So be nifsol achilas kelev, anything which happens to be in the garbage. But another thing that I do, just to cover all bases, is that I will say to our non-Jewish purchaser, I will say this sale that I'm making will also include everything that's in the garbage cans. I say I'm selling to everything as well, in case you should be interested. There's a nice dipsy doodle in the garbage can or something that, you know, you might like. So what's going to be, you know, anything which is in the garbage cans is also sold to you. You know, even if it's not specifically spelled out.
Isn't that like a negative? Doesn't that make the sale a joke then?
It doesn't make it a joke. Why does it make it a joke?
Who sells garbage?
You don't know. Sometimes, as I said, the whole concern is that there'll be something which is edible within the garbage. So maybe you'll find something which is very good. It's double wrapped. It's triple wrapped. You know, how many wrappings do you need to make it still desirable in a garbage? Probably like even an infinite amount wouldn't work. But just in case, we say that we're going to do this just to cover all bases. So I throw in the garbage piece as well. Now, if you witness your typical sale of chametz, one thing that you'll notice is that it seems to be convoluted in terms of all of the steps that are taken. I mean, how complicated is it to just sell something to another individual? I sell something to you, so we can sign a document saying, okay, I hereby am selling to you my furniture or something like that. I'm selling my house to you. When it comes to chametz, there are many different transactions that we do. We have kesef. We have a payment of money. We have shtar. We have the signing of a document. We have a kinyan suder, where the seller takes an item of value from the purchaser, lifts it up in the air, and thereby transfers to the purchaser everything that is being sold. That's called a kinyan suder. Typically, we do that with a handkerchief. Nowadays, there aren't so many handkerchiefs around anymore. I have a few, because when I was working as an attorney, so my secretary one year gave me, for my birthday, she gave me a package of handkerchiefs. They were actually called handkerchiefs, and they all had pictures of Indian chiefs on every single handkerchief. So I saved them. You know, I didn't know what the use would be, but I saved them for kinyan suder. So Ada Yom Hazeh, I still have a few of those handkerchiefs left, and whenever we have to make a kinyan suder, so I use one of those handkerchiefs. Okay, so I bring, every single year, I bring one of those handkerchiefs to the Mechiras Chometz, much to the chagrin of Abbe Mateki. It's a different story, but I bring it, you know, and I talk about the origin of the handkerchiefs, and that's the kinyan suder. We also do a handshake. We shake on the deal. And then, when you think that everything is over, so then we have this whole new series of transactions in which we have a rental of the spaces, because the chametz is located on certain property. So we do a kinyan chatzir, in which we rent out the property where the chametz is located, and the rental of the property obviously includes whatever is on the property. That's called kinyan chatzir. Then we do a kinyan agav, What's a kinyan agav? Kinyan agav sounds like a strange word. Kinyan agav means that you're allowed to say, I'm transferring, I could be renting certain real property to the purchaser. And agav, and by dint or by strength of the real property, the purchaser will also acquire all of my movable, all of my personal property. And the kinyan agav, the personal property doesn't have to be located on the space that I am renting, which makes kinyan agav even a little bit better. But how is it that we effectuate the skirus and this kinyan agav? We effectuate it the same way, through the payment of money, through the signing of the document, through a kinyan suda, and through the shaking of hands. So I do the payment of money, and I do the kinyan suda, and I do the shaking of hands twice. I do it two different times. One, with respect to the actual sale of the chometz itself, and one with respect to the rental of the property that's going to enable the chometz to be transferred with it at the same time. Why do we do all of these different things? Because for every single one, there's an opinion that says it doesn't work. So we figure that if we do all of them, so everybody would agree that at least one of them works. So that's the long comment that we have here in Source 6. Source 6 is the Mishnah Berurah that says in the second line, yeah, we do b'kesef. Some say that whenever you sell to a non-Jew, it has to be only b'kesef. If you're selling movable property, like chometz. Now, some say it has to be only b'kesef with money. And some say it has to be mashicha, that the non-Jew moves the property into his possession. That would be fine if all that I had was one bottle of schnapps. But if I have everybody's bottles of schnapps, and all of their Cheerios, and all of their loaves, and all of their mixtures of chametz that they have, I'm not going to be able to physically transfer all of these to the non-Jew, that he's going to take them physically and move them into his property. So I can't do both kesef and mashicha. If I did both kesef and mashicha, I'd be done. Because there's a machlokis as to which of these two transactions work to transfer movable property to a non-Jew. What does it say? The Torah says, if I sell to my fellow Jew, I buy from my fellow Jew, how am I effectuating that kinyan? Machlokis. Rabbi Yochanan said, Mos konos, through money. Rabbi Shlakish says, Mashiach konos, through the taking into, the physical taking into possession. So whichever shita we hold like, we would have to do the opposite when we're selling to non-Jews. If we hold like Rabbi Yochanan, which is what Rabbi Natan assumes, then we would have to use only a kinyan Mashiach for a non-Jew. If we hold like Rabbi Shlakish, the Mashiach works for a Jew, we would have to do only a kinyan kesef, only money from a non-Jew. That's how Rashi holds. So we have a machlokis, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. We have a machlokis, achronim, which one we hold like, whether we hold like Rashi, whether we hold like Rabbeinu Tam. We have a machlokis, achronim, as to which opinion is held by most of the Rishonim. We can't even agree on that. So therefore, we do the kesef, and we can't really do the mashika, so we're worried. We gotta throw something else in. So there is an opinion that says, okay, no problem, you're going to throw in the kinyan suda, you're going to have the lifting up of the handkerchief, so then you're definitely going to be covered through the lifting up of the handkerchief. The only thing is that while maybe there are some opinions that say that that works for sure with respect to a non-Jew, there are other opinions that say no, because there's a pasuk in Megillas Rus that says, "V'zos l'pnim b'Yisrael, ala gula ve'ala tzumah v'kayem kol davar shalot isha na'alo me'al raglo minasan l'reyeh v'zos l'tudah b'Yisrael," right? Where it says that the way that was the kinyan suda, they would give like a shoe to pick up, and that would transfer property. So this is zos l'tudah b'Yisrael. This was done for Jews, but it wouldn't necessarily work for non-Jews. So for every single one of these kinyanim, somebody says, oh, it doesn't necessarily work. What about a handshake? A handshake is what we call kinyan situmta. That's the practice of the marketplace. Some say that's only derabanan, and a kinyan derabanan is not going to work for a deraisa. What about kinyan shtar? Kinyan shtar, at least on a Torah level, doesn't really work to transfer movables property. It only works to transfer real property. So therefore, that would only work inside like Dina de Machusa. Does Dina de Machusa work on a Doraisa level, on a Durabunan level? Do Durabunans work from a Mechiras Kamet? So you have these disagreements on all of these different fronts, which is why at the end, we effectuate all of these different kinyanim. What about Kinyan Agav? Kinyan Agav, it seems like it's pretty good. I'll sell real estate, and then the chometz will go along. There's a Rabbeinu Yerucham that says Kinyan Agav is great. There's a Ktsos that says Kinyan Agav is only a Kinyan Durabunan. Kinyanei Durabunan were established for the Jewish people, not for the non-Jewish people. And therefore, it's not going to work in order to transfer chometz to a non-Jew. So therefore, since we have so many different opinions, we do everything. We're at Kinyan Chatzir. The chometz that's on my property, at least the Kinyan Chatzir, the Gemara indicates, should work to transfer it to a non-Jew. Some say, no, Chatzir is mitam shlichus. Chatzir works because it's like my agent. There's no agency with respect to a non-Jew on a halakhic level. all. So therefore, and some say no, that Kinyan Chatzer only is works mitam Kinyan Yad, because it's like an extension of the person's hand. But that's only according to the Gemara if you're selling to a non-Jewish woman, as opposed to a non-Jewish man, because, or to a Jewish woman or a Jewish man, because chatzim mitam yad is used to explain how you can give a get to a katana. So that's the only we're talking about with respect to a girl, not with respect to a boy. So by the same token, there was some achorim that said you should use kinyan chatzim but only sell to a non-Jewish woman and not to a non-Jewish man. So that we don't follow, that particular chumah. We generally have a non-Jewish man that we sell the chumahs to. And then there was a concern, what if his non-Jewish woman is married? So then everything would go to the husband anyway, and therefore it wouldn't work. She would have to be an unmarried non-Jewish woman. So it gets a little bit crazy, but we don't, you know, go so far. But then there's
the
opinion.
Do you ask if the guy's wife is Jewish?
That's an interesting question. What if she would be Jewish? Would we say what he's acquiring would go to her too? It's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. We probably should be careful about that as well. So then there's the opinion of the Baal HaTanya. The Baal HaTanya says that in addition to all of these other kinyanim, to all of these other acquisitions, the Baal HaTanya says this is already source. I thought I had it here. Okay, source 15. Okay, source 15. The source 15, the Baal HaTanya says that he's worried that as far as the Kinyan Kesef is concerned, that seems to be the most straightforward, just the payment of money. As far as the Kinyan Kesef is concerned, since what's going to happen is that the non-Jew is not going to pay the full amount that would be owing for the entirety of the chumas, because that could be like ten thousands of dollars when you're dealing with an entire community. He's not going to pay that entire amount. He'll pay a certain ceremonial down payment. He'll pay a down payment. A certain, and then the rest will be what we call a loan. The rest will be outstanding as a loan. So Baal HaTanya said, well, we're worried, then we're not done with the transaction. The Jewish seller still has an interest in the transaction because he's going to run after the non-Jew to collect the rest of the money. So he still has an ASIC. He still has an involvement in the chumetz because he's still collecting money for the chumetz. So therefore, in order that we not have to worry that this sale is somehow negated because that the Jewish seller is going to go after the non-Jewish buyer for the rest of the money, we cause somebody else to take responsibility. Somebody who is not the purchaser of the chumetz is going to take responsibility for paying off the rest of the price of the chumetz. That's what we call the Arif Kablan. So when we sit around and we do the Mechivas Chumetz on Erev Pesach, the hardest thing for me to do is to find someone who's willing to be the Arev Kablan. I have to find one of the Rabbanim sitting around the table. I say, who wants to be the Arev Kablan who's going to take the responsibility to pay for the rest of the money? So even though what is required by the Baal HaTanya is not necessarily something that the whole world is chosheish for, some say it actually creates a separate problem, because now the Arev Kaplan, this Jewish individual that we really want to make sure doesn't have any interest in chometz, has a little bit of interest here because he's put himself on the line with respect to this chometz. So some don't like this idea, but the Aruch HaShulchan said that it's a good thing to do to have this Arev Kaplan in addition to everything else, because once you're going to have about seven kinyanim, you may as well have ten. So we're going to throw in another kinyan as well. And and Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz always followed this practice here in Chicago. The practice was always that we threw in this extra kinyan of the Arev Kaplan, the guarantor, sitting around the table. So we do the Arev Kaplan. He signs a document and does a kinyan sudar, and that works as well. So one of the questions that arises is, what do you mean we only are renting out the space? Why don't we sell the actual space? That seems to be the best thing. Like the Bechor Shor indicated, you sell the places that are going to, like you have a pantry, you have a room in which the chumetz is located, why don't you sell it? So there are really a couple of reasons why we don't necessarily do that. One is enunciated by the Mishnah Berurah himself, who points out, people don't always own their property. If I don't own the property, I sure can't sell the property. People sometimes are renting their property, so you can't ask renters to sell their property. So therefore, that's one reason why rental is sufficient. And another explanation from Moshe Feinstein gives is that it could be that whatever modes of transaction we use, we want them to be recognized as legitimate. Again, going to the question of whether this is just a ruse or a real transaction, we want it to be viewed as legitimate in the eyes of the government. So he says, there's no such thing as selling real estate without having it recorded in the land records and going through that whole rigmarole. If you're not going to do that, that's not going to look serious. So therefore, Moshe says, for that reason, it makes much more sense that you should do it in the form of a rental. Some were concerned that it was just a rental, so then maybe the Jew still bears a certain amount of achrayus, because we say skivus lo kanya. So Shlomo Kluger dealt with that and said, no, as long as you stipulate when the non-Jew who's renting it that you're not going to have any achrayus, you're not going to have any responsibility, you need not worry about that.
So you're not selling the chometz kalim, you're selling just the chometz that's within the kalim? Otherwise, you have a problem with
so another thing that they say is don't sell the actual utensils, because if you sell the utensils that are housing the kalim, so then you're going to have to do tefillah afterwards. So what we do is we say, we're not selling anything. We're renting it out. But we'll say we're renting it out, but if a person has kalim, if they have actual utensils, so we're prepared to sell the utensils if it's not the type of utensils that require tefillah. But so that is in the Hebrew form, that's not in the English form. Yetzer Hashem, next time that we convene, we will talk about Mechiras Chometz with respect to stocks and with respect to companies and with respect to investments in companies that may have ownership of chometz. How do we deal with those situations? And how do we deal with situations of buying from companies that did a Mechiras Chometz but really didn't seem to take it seriously, because after they sold all their chometz, they're doing business with their chometz even over the course of Pesach. So yes, Hashem, that will be the subject of next week's Chaburah.
And I'm from Jews.
Yes, we'll talk about that too.